this is Mike Burke. I'm a partner with the Washington, D.C. office of Arnold, Gold & Gregory. And this is the second time we're trying to record the first episode of a two-part conversation with our new partner, Allison Rayleigh. Part two, which will be after this, was recorded properly. And I think I was the one that forgot to press the record button when we did part one. And so here we are again, doing part one. Allison, if you could just introduce yourself and just tell the audience a bit about what you do.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I'm always happy to chat with you. So I'm happy when you don't record, or we could maybe do like a part three someday. So
that's right.
Allison Rayleigh, I've been practicing sanctions, AML, BSA in the cryptocurrency and fintech world. But today we're talking about my experience sitting in the general counsel seat and kind of walking through what it's like to be in-house as an in-house executive for either your clients or if there's any clients listening, things to think through when you're looking at international expansion, which is, I think, what we're discussing today.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, why don't we start there? You know, from your former seat as the general counsel, what considerations are you facing when your business side comes and says, you know, we want to expand across borders?
Right. I think the first thing that may sound very intuitive, but sometimes is actually counterintuitive, depending on how, which is, well, you'll understand my chuckle when I get there, depending on how your company is set up, is ensuring that when the business brings you a cross-border opportunity, requiring your review as a general counsel, that they've actually spoken to the CFO. And that the CFO agrees that it's a revenue opportunity worth pursuing, or you've had a fuller executive conversation where it may not be a revenue generating opportunity at the moment, but it could be beneficial to you as a business opportunity later on down the road. I think having those conversations early on are so critical because most of the time, general counsels have very limited time and availability, and you're really spinning lots of plates. So reducing a plate that doesn't need to be there in the first place, I think is a really good idea. So I always say, make sure everyone's on board before you spend hours digging into a cross-border opportunity as a general counsel. It'll save you heartache and pain down the road when you could have been putting out another fire. After looking at that, is this a real opportunity worth pursuing? My first step is always to be very lawyer nerdy and go to the regulations of that jurisdiction based on your business model, based on the obligations to license and register within that new jurisdiction. And then I also like to look at consent orders. Any recent consent orders that you might be able to find within that jurisdiction that relate to the product or business that you're seeking to expand. And I think that looking at consent orders, obviously we don't love regulation for enforcement, but if we're being realistic, oftentimes businesses get a lot of directional focusing and understanding of what regulators are really looking for in a compliance framework by reviewing those consent orders. So I do think that that is a key part of your initial review of a jurisdiction. So we've got all three of those components. I then like to put together a spreadsheet for the other executives for a full executive discussion, or if you discuss these things with your CEO or your CFO, whoever your discussion grouping is, your cluster. And I think key things that you should include as general counsel for your other executive team is there a license and registration requirement? Obviously, what is that requirement if you're able to pull that out? Now, sometimes you do need local counsel to help you determine the requirements in jurisdictions that might not be quite as regulation forward or emerging. Sometimes you need that local counsel, but if you can find it, include it. I also think it's really important to include, is a physical office requirement present? Is it an officer requirement? Is it a personnel requirement? And then oftentimes regulations will tell you the level of employee required in that jurisdiction, if there is one. Sometimes there's not a requirement, but I think those are, because an executive paying an executive is far different than hiring maybe a more junior individual from a cost analysis for registration and licensing and expanding cross-border. So I think that's really important to include. And then, of course, if there's any fines that you're able to identify related to failure to register or license or failure to comply with whatever regulation might be required based on your industry type and model. Obviously, that's a very important one. And then I do, like I said earlier, I like to flag in and give brief, very brief executive summaries of consent orders applicable to our business type in this new jurisdiction, if you can find it. Like I said, not all jurisdictions have consent orders in the very American US way that we're familiar with, but many jurisdictions do have their own version. And like I said, I think it's a really key thing to put in front of your executive board early on.
And one of the other things we spoke about on our failed first recording was, you know, knowing your product and sort of meshing that with the regulatory framework, because in some areas, the regulatory framework is going to be far behind what the market is.
Right. Thank you for reminding that part of our conversation, because I think that was one of the key points that we walked away with in that first reporting was your obligation as product, as general counsel, to understand product in a way that's technically sound, but also in a way that you can present to regulators in a defensible way. And when I say defensible, not meaning that you've done something wrong as a company, but as it meshes with regulation that may exist in that jurisdiction, especially in the emerging marketplace. And I believe I said, and I think this is absolutely critical, a GC, especially in the emerging technology space, should be closest with their chief product officer or chief technical officer, because one, you're able to issue spot and help them build a product. We never say no in the general counsel seat, or we try not to. We try to say no. If not, I forgot our slogan, but
not if, but how, right?
I mean, yes, not if,
but well, the yes, how. But
yes, exactly. So if we're involved in the product discussions from an ideation standpoint, we're also able to issue spot. And sometimes the tweak can be very subtle to help product create a compliant and regulatory facing defensible platform. And I think that, you know, understanding we're no longer like GCs in the emerging technology space are no longer segmented off doing our nerdy lawyer things. We really need to reshape our vision for the role into we are regulatory strategy officers with our product and technology team. So we need to understand the product to its core. We need to be able to explain what the product does to the regulators in a way that they can understand it. Now, like I said earlier, our regulators have also worked extremely hard over the last decade, I would say, to be very on the front lines and to understand new technology. You look at the talent that NYDFS has currently employed and the expansion they've had in their BitLicense department. And our regulators are trying to assist in the understanding of new technologies so that they can make sure that customers and citizens are safe, which is obviously their primary concern and should be our primary concern as well as GCs. And so I really think that they're doing everything they can. So we need to help present our product in a way that either fits in with the regulation as is, allows us to answer questions, allows us to be really strong advocates in a tech-focused way versus maybe what general counsels looked like in the past, more legal-facing.
You know, one of the other things we did talk about was we're building a relationship with the regulators. Mm-hmm. And too often, I don't know if it's the American mindset or, well, pick your reason. Always seems that we start from an adversarial position with regulators, and it doesn't have to be that way.
No, in order to be best representing your product, your company, you need to have a strong relationship with your regulators. I love the fact that I'm chat often with my former regulators on a collegial level now after I've left where I was previously. You know, that's the type of relationship that a general counsel should be building with the regulators. you should also be seen as a resource and tool to your regulators if you are properly acting in your. You should be the person that the regulators are like, oh, I know Mike is a straight shooter. I know that he's not going to have a bad attitude, which is insane to think about. Because you really are in a relationship with your regulators. I often don't understand why executives come with bad attitudes to their regulators, even when sometimes the calls get intense. But you should be seen as a person that a regulator is comfortable calling and asking questions of, because it's far better for a regulator to say you filed a material change or a license or a registration, any of those things. It's far better for a regulator to call you, Mike, and say, hey, Mike, I noticed this new product offering. Hey, like this one element looks a little odd. Could you explain that? And if you are a good general counsel and you understand your product, you're then able to hopefully explain the product in a way that makes sense, that shows that all the great due diligence that you've done, that your chief compliance officer's done, and get them comfortable with what's happening. That type of relationship is far better than when a regulator does not trust you, does not have that relationship with you, and you start getting RFIs. And that is never a good direction to head when you're just speaking through paper, especially in the emerging technology space.
Yeah, because again, it moves so quickly. And again, and I think we've chatted about this, that having that kind of a good relationship with a regulator, you know, generally is important, but even more so in jurisdictions where, you know, as you said previously, the regulations may not be the clearest, right? The relationship can combat the opacity of some regulations.
Right, exactly. And the creativity required in being a general counsel or chief compliance officer in an emerging technology space where you're trying to piece together regulations that are from a time far before when your technology was even contemplated, being able to walk a regulator through your thought process is critical. And I liked to, when I was having those type of conversations, I would actually make a flow chart. I know that's kind of a more product development, department facing tool, but I found it really helpful to me when stepping through where I've had to weave together multiple regulations and then defend what I've done. I've found flowcharting what I've done to be really beneficial. And no, I don't, obviously that's attorney client, you don't produce that, but for just yourself as you're on the calls, walking through it with your regulators or walking through it with your board of directors, which is also something you should be doing as a general counsel during product launches or cross-border expansion. I have found I far more eloquently discuss when I take that more structured stance.
Right, because a lot of times this question of international expansion rises to the board level, you know, because it can be, you know, a material investment by the company. It's not inexpensive to just sit and decide, hey, you know, we're going to open an office in Germany.
Right. No, it's a very expensive process. And it also has varying enforcement or penalty risks, which anytime that you could potentially be facing penalties or have additional compliance or regulatory requirements, you should be bringing that to your board. And if your board is most boards are highly successful individuals that have some knowledge base in the industry that you are in. Yep. They probably will have very probing questions if you have a good interaction with your board related to what you're presenting. So coming with fully armed with even detailed information, maybe you give the executive summary and they dig down later, is really critical, because just like you said, Mike, extremely expensive. It opens the company up to risks. They need to be aware of the risks as well, not just the cost of expanding cross-border. And then I also really like to highlight that, you know, they are one of your best resources, your board is, and they can really help you think through. And also, you should never, obviously, I'm not recommending you do a dry run with your board of directors.
Right.
Regulatory. That's a good way to get in trouble by your CEO.
That's right.
Come with a well-polished presentation.
Yes.
But giving that presentation first to your board can be really helpful in presenting to regulators as well.
Right.
Like I said, your board of directors is most likely very experienced, very successful individuals, you most likely were in your industry prior to, if you're in an emerging technology field, prior to where maybe the technology is today. And speaking to them and explaining to them this new offering or this new desire to be cross-border or how your product fits with a cross-border regulation that might be slightly different than the US regulation is a really good sounding board for you as a GC. You may hear things as you're presenting to them. You should be, anyways, as general counsel, but I think having that conversation prior to filing your application cross-border, prior to reaching out cross-border to start establishing a relationship with your regulator is really critical. I would also like to highlight, it's important for you as the general counsel. I know it's onerous to fly everywhere, but if it's a big opportunity for your business or a big license, if it's like an EMI license in the EU, I would recommend flying and meeting at least the first time face-to-face with your regulator so they can get to know you if they're open to that. I know not all regulators are open to face-to-face meetings still, but if they're open to that meeting, I would highly recommend you do that as a general counsel, or highly recommend you advising your clients to do that or going with your clients that first time to the meeting. It's just human nature. If you have interaction or face-to-face contact with your regulator, they're more likely to pick up the phone, like we talked about earlier.
You develop that mutual respect where,
yes,
you know, neither one of you is looking at the other expecting a bad consequence.
Yes, exactly. So you really become advocates to each other, because you have to remember too, as a GC, your regulators also have supervisors. They have to present to and say, this is why we did this with this entity that we're not regulating, or these are the questions I asked in the application. So setting them up for success as well with whoever they report to, I think that it's that human element that we were talking about earlier, and seeing our regulators as, you know, actual people, just like we hope they see us as people. It really sets everyone up for success. It achieves the goal of making sure our products are safe and sound for customers and citizens.
Yeah, not just the regulators too. You know, that travel can help you get a better picture of the market, but also, you know, we were talking earlier about employees. One of the factors I see time and again when non-US companies expand into the US, you know, there's a correlation between, you know, failure of that expansion and the amount of time somebody from the company spends in the US, you know, and and the idea that somehow, and it's going to be true for any other jurisdiction, but the idea that somehow you're going to hire somebody and let them run with it is really short-sighted.
Right. 100%. And so I know we'll talk about that more in the next piece, but your regulator should be viewed exactly the same way. And if it is a big opportunity, that means the executives need to get on the plane and go meet those regulators face to face. I would recommend that even prior to your application being filed, I would reach out and say, hey, we're considering filing an application or a license. Could we come into for a face to face? We just want to make sure that we're providing the most complete application possible. And so I would recommend having that meeting in the timeline and where does it fit prior to actually submitting your application, if they'll be amenable to that. Typically, if not face-to-face, they'll certainly give you a phone call or Zoom.
Benefit of that too, in a best case scenario, is, you know, as you're walking them through a potential application, they can flag areas for you. Because we're not going to know, we on the sort of the external legal side, we're not going to know 100% of what a regulator is thinking. I mean, we may have a good idea, but having a regulator review your registration it's a good thing.
It's a good thing, right? And it should be viewed as a good thing. And if you are working hard at listening in those conversations, you can really be a good advocate to your client as well. Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons that it is helpful when looking, especially in the emerging technology space, perhaps not in other spaces, but having a company and working with a law firm that has some in-house counsel prior individuals now in private practice again, I think it's really critical. They don't have to be former general counsels, but at least having some that have dealt in-house with regulators, I do think is a real benefit to clients in the emerging technology space cross-border when you're going out and expanding. So something to keep in mind as you look for your law firms as well as a client.
You know, one of the things that I've said this to you before, you know, when you joined us, one of the key things, at least for me, was that in-house experience. As external lawyers have never been in-house, you know, we work obviously with a lot of general counsels and chief legal officers, but, you know, we don't know the day-to-day. It's that perspective that's so critical.
Right. And sometimes it's just understanding the weight of being a general counsel and the struggles that they face internally. Sometimes just understanding and helping them be able to couch solutions and presenting information to them in a way that really benefits them from an executive standpoint. I think it's some of those soft things that are really helpful when you have former in-house people at a law firm.
Right.
I think the touches and how to work with your regulators, et cetera, is really helpful in forming an overall strategy for success when you are looking at cross-border expansion.
Yeah. Allison, I think that's time for episode one. Thank you so much for this and your patience. And we've already done episode two, and I think people will enjoy where that picks up.
Yeah, I think so as well. Always happy to join you, Mike, and looking forward to perhaps a part three after part two.
That's right. We can definitely do a part three. Yeah, again, this is Mike Burke with Allison Raley of Arnold, Gold & Gregory. Thank you for tuning in to AGG Talks Cross-Border Business. There will be, and there is, a part two of this conversation that will be released on the same day as this one. So please tune in. Thank you very much, everybody.